Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Give us your attention. We need everything you got fast. Waiting on reparations. We be the illest podcast.
Tune in every Thursday. Politics and wordplay. We fight for the people because they got us in the worst way.
From the Hill to Brazil, Bombay to Kanye.
From the left enclave to what the neocons say.
Every Thursday, cop the heady conversation.
And break us off with some bread because we're waiting on reparations.
Listen to Waiting on Reparations on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Joe Piazza, host of the podcast Under the Influence. If you tuned into our last season, you know that the world of mom influencers on Instagram contains multitudes. Yes, there are pretty pictures and gorgeous kids, and yes, there's lots of money behind a lot of those pictures, but there is also something much more dark and complicated going on in the background. And that speaks to everything that is wrong with how we treat women in the world. On season two of Under the Influence, we're advocating for the women who make content and the women who consume it. We're going into some of the darkest corners of the social media universe, and we might just have a plan to shut it all the hell down. Listen to season two of Under the Influence with Joe Piazza on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Greg Daniels. I was the showrunner of The Office.
Hello, hello, everybody. Thank you for diving in to another episode of The Office Deep Dive. See what I did there? I am your host, Brian Baumgartner, and I am so thankful that you are here. Yes, for those of you listening in real time, it is Thanksgiving week here in the States, and I love this time of year. Truly. The crisp air, my birthday, the fall leaves, my birthday, football. It is the best. All right. And as I mentioned last week, working on this podcast with some of my favorite people in the whole entire world has just been, well, it's hard to put into words, but it is definitely the thing that I am most thankful for this Thanksgiving. My family aside, of course, but know this, my podcast, this podcast, it has truly changed my life. And the other thing that, without question, has changed my life, who I'm so thankful to be talking to today, is our showrunner, Greg Daniels. His brilliance, his mentorship, his general aura of greatness. I am just so happy and feel so blessed that this man is a part of my life. So I'm going to bring you today the last part of my conversation with Greg. As you know, he was the creator of The Office, and he has gone on to make Parks and Rec and Upload and Space Force and so much more. He also wrote the foreword of our new book, Welcome to Dunder Mifflin. So if you get a chance, go check that out. But it was important for me that on this week of giving thanks, that I give thanks to my boss of almost a decade. And while famously Michael Scott was the world's best boss, everything he knew, he learned from Greg Daniels. Is that a compliment? I don't know. But anyway, give it up for the best boss on the entire planet, the galaxy, the incomparable Greg Daniels.
Bubble and squeak, I love it. Bubble and squeak, I know. Bubble and squeak, I cook it every morning, left over from the night before.
Okay, well, here's kind of a fun one. So you worked with Steve Carell.
Yeah.
John Krasinski, Rainn Wilson, and, well, myself. And I've heard it has been said that your favorite actor of all time is Paul Lieberstein.
Paul's very good. I mean, I'm certainly not going to say anything negative about Paul. I don't want to rank you guys. I don't think that's fair.
No.
But Paul is like, I didn't expect him to be so good, you know?
Right.
He basically just filled in at the table read in season one, and Kevin would go to the table reads, and Paul got laughs, and Kevin was like, what happened to that guy with the red hair? You know, put him in more. And that's how he got on the show pretty much. But he always had an interesting attitude about it. And, you know, Paul's like a jazz vibraphonist. And I feel like something about that jazz timing was in his performance and was like a little bit unusual. Yeah, no, he's great, but I don't want to say like anybody's better than anybody else.
Why did you choose Paul and Jen to run the show after when you left to go do Parks?
Well, the interesting thing about making the writers performers is that kind of bites you a little bit. Like season one, we wrote all the scripts, we shot all the shows, and then I went into editing and just did full-time editing. And that was great because you could be physically present at everything. It was really fun.
Right.
And that was when, you know, Paul became a character, Mindy became a character, BJ was always a character, and there was no downside to that. Season two, we start, and then those guys go off to the set, and I'm suddenly looking around, I've got like half the staff, you know, I got Mike and Jen and Lee, right, and Jean, and that's it. Everybody else is on set, you know, and then they'd show up and they obviously still did great stuff and wrote great episodes and everything. But there were times when the room was a little bit thin because they were acting. And Mike was a very mature, full package. Like he could produce, he could write, and he wasn't one of the main characters. And I also felt very much responsible to the cast and to Steve. And if Steve was not going to go do movies and bug out and was going to stick with it, I didn't want to be the guy who was, you know, going to do something to detriment the show.
Right.
So I didn't want to have him be like, oh, you can't find Mindy or Paul on set because they're doing a spinoff or whatever. And I guess Mike had worked there for 4 years and he was going to go anyway. Do you know what I mean? It's not like he was going to put the rest of his career working there. He was pretty ambitious and headed places. So I felt like he would be a good choice to do it because I could set it up with him and then he could run it and I could still see the office through. So, and we had different ideas. Like the Parks is the idea of, okay, it's a mockumentary. Instead of being about business in the private sector, it's about the public sector.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I had an idea that I thought was good, which was, all right, workplace is a good genre of TV comedy, but an even bigger genre is family show. What about a mockumentary about a family show? And I had a plan after Mike was going to spin off and do Parks, I was going to do a show with Jen, and we were going to do the family sitcom one. And we had worked it out. Ed Helms was going to maybe be the lead with Catherine Tate as his wife, and they were, and it was going to be the mockumentary looking at a cul-de-sac, some kind of suburban cul-de-sac. And then Modern Family came out.
Okay.
And, you know, was a huge hit.
So right.
That kind of put the end to that plan.
Right. Mike Schur said about being asked to go and develop Parks and Rec. He basically said that it feels like Mozart told me he wants to design a piano with me.
Not Steinway. Mozart.
Mozart designing a piano. Yeah.
Mozart, very incompetent piano maker.
Yeah, but still somebody you probably should follow.
But yeah, that's cool. That was nice. Yeah, it was certainly fun to do Parks. I mean, we, you know, were so close to the office that we thought Parks was just completely different. I mean, like we didn't see it as having
any
bearing at all on the office. Like we got a female and it's a completely, you know, different world and everything. And of course, in the same way, like it took season one to be able to get free of the English show, you know, like season one Parks was too close probably still. And I think we figured that out. We didn't have a pilot because Ben was now running NBC and Ben hooked us straight to series for Parks. And so by the time we looked at the footage of the pilot, we were already shooting episode 3 or something
right.
from Parks. But we kind of steered it around. Part of it was, I remember thinking like, okay, it's not all about a crazy central character. It's more like 30 Rock maybe, where the central character is surrounded by crazy. And like when we kind of made that adjustment, it seemed to work better. But Amy's like very different from Steve. She's a different type of performer.
In what way?
Well, like I don't think she can hide her intelligence. Like one of Steve's real gifts is you can stare at his face and he's doing something really stupid and you can't tell that he is aware that it's stupid. Do you know what I mean? He completely hides his intelligence.
Yeah.
And Amy probably could if she wanted to, but chooses not to. And she doesn't hide it. And I think maybe it's also being a woman. You know what I mean? It's like it means something different to hide your intelligence.
Right.
It's more retro and, you know, uncool probably to hide your intelligence as a woman.
Right.
So it didn't fit great to have her play naive. She had to be a little smarter.
Right. What do you think was the bigger loss, Michael or Steve?
Huh. Wow. Oy. Well, I do think that when we said goodbye to Steve, it became really clear how much the crew loved him. And the stories from different crew members was really sweet. I mean, I remember like when 40-Year-Old Virgin was still in theaters and he was the biggest movie star in the country. And we were shooting, I think, the Dundies. And we were in a parking lot, like of a defunct Black Angus. It's 2 or 3 in the morning. And his entire role is to drive the car away from Jenna after saying his line. And he's doing it at 3 in the morning, take after take after take, to support her in that scene where so many people would have been like, yeah, put the photo double in, goodbye. And I'm doing a show with him now. I'm doing Space Force with him now. And he's number one on the call sheet. Same deal. We just had our wrap party. The crew came up to me. They were all like, it starts at the top. the vibe on the set is so beautiful and everybody's, you know, such a great feeling and everything. But, you know, one of the things that I got out of working with Steve was like, I didn't really have an improv background. You know what I mean? Like I had come from sketch comedy and then Simpsons. And when we started working together, he told me about this book, Truth and Comedy, which is kind of like the Bible of the Chicago improv world. And I found that to be really the key to kind of how he worked. And it saved us a bunch of times. When one of my favorite memories of Steve as a producer or as a, you know, not as an actor, is we were doing Dundee's. And the problem was we went to a Black Angus and then we went to Chili's restaurant and we didn't actually get any money for it.
Right.
You know, it's not like they paid us a lot of money to use Chili's. What they did was they sent us their branded decorations for set deck. So we saved.
Their menus and
their
stuff.
Yeah, we got the menus and we got some signs and stuff. Anyway, so we're there. We're at this defunct Black Angus for 3 days shooting with all the Chili's stuff. And like on day two, the Chili's lawyers call and they go, oh, hey, we just looked at the script. The part where Pam is so drunk she throws up, that's not going to work for us. We're being sued for over-serving patrons and we can't, that's a bad look. So you can't do that. And I was like cocky at this point. I was like, yeah, well, we shot 2/3 of our shoot, you know, and I turned to the Universal executives and I was like, well, check the contract with the Chili's because obviously, you know, they don't have.
It is Ryan here and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on.
Get ready for a ride.
We're gonna have some fun.
We'll explore and listen to the sounds of awesome places like farms, racetracks, and even construction sites!
Follow your ears, what do you hear?
And we'll meet new friends along the way!
They'll teach us awesome new things about the places and things we see and hear!
What did we learn today?
Learning is so cool!
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip Podcasts on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Editorial control. And they're like, there's no contract. There's no written contract. We just thought we'd save $50,000 of set deck, and we just did it on a handshake. So then we were like, well, wait, what do we do? And they were like, well, you don't have to take that note, but in that case, you can't show any of the branded set decoration that we sent you, which meant that we would have had to go back to the beginning and not use the 2 days that we already shot, which we couldn't afford, right?
Right.
Because it was hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I was like getting ill in the corner, freaking out, and Steve notices and is like, what's up? And I told him the situation. And the thing that was so cool to me was this improv thing. Like, he had utter faith always that he would, his creativity would never flag, that he would be able to find an answer when it was necessary. Like, that's
right.
What all that improv training was. And I completely shut down. I was like going to blow my brains out. And he was like, okay, all right, well, all right. And then he came up with this notion of the manager being interviewed and saying that Pam had a lifetime ban from Chili's, and it solved everything. And I really was like, huh, that's a different way to live than I'm used to. You know, the overthinker doesn't do that, right? I had all my plans had just been thrown for a loop. And so I feel like I try to take that away. I think it's like a little bit of a religion for him to be an improv guy.
It's a hard time for hiring, so you need a hiring partner built for hard times. That's Indeed. If you're hiring, you need Indeed, because Indeed is the hiring partner where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. And Indeed is the only job site where you're guaranteed to find quality applications that meet your must-have requirements, or else you don't pay. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites hoping to find candidates with the right skills, you need one hiring partner that can help you do it all. Indeed partners with you on every step of the hiring process. Find great talent through time-saving tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. With Instant Match, as soon as you sponsor a post, you get a short list of quality candidates with resumes on Indeed that match your job description, and you can invite them to apply right away. Plus, you only pay for quality applications that meet your must-have requirements. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive. Offer valid through March 31st. Go to Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive to claim your $75 credit before March 31st. Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, it's Jake Halpern here. If you've ever wondered what it's like to make a true crime podcast like Deep Cover, well, now's your chance to find out. Join me and my friend Dana Goodyear, who's the host of Pushkin's Lost Hills podcast, on March 16th for a digital conversation on true crime storytelling. We'll talk about how we make our stories dramatic and accurate, and how we navigate all the ethical dilemmas that we face in the process. Get your tickets now at momenthouse.com/DCLH. That's momenthouse.com/DCLH.
What grows in the forest? Trees? Sure. Know what else grows in the forest? Our imagination, our sense of wonder, and our family bonds grow too. Because when we disconnect from this and connect with this, we reconnect with each other. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
What do you remember about, because you, obviously you came back for Goodbye Michael.
Yeah.
How did you feel writing him off? I mean, did you feel like the show was going to, should go on past him?
Yeah, I did, because, you know, part of the painful part of my job is, as the showrunner, you're not done when the wrap, right? You got to go edit all of the things. So like at least a third, maybe more of my job was sitting with the editors,
right,
cutting the show down. And then it made a huge difference in our show, because our rough cuts were 38 minutes long and we had to get down to 21:03 or whatever. So that's an enormous amount to throw out. And it was very painful, because we could get the show down to 26 minutes or something with just cutting the fat. But then after that, you got to cut the muscle. You know, there's good scenes that are not going to be broadcast. And, you know, once we got 5-6 years into the show, the full ensemble was really working and capable of doing really good stuff. And so the best argument to me to continue was, it would let all these people who didn't have as much screen time have more screen time. And Steve obviously didn't want us to shut down.
Right.
So I kind of felt like it was good that we would do okay. Now, the difficulty is that people are not created to be leads. And you know, all that stuff that I was saying in the beginning of positioning Steve in season two and finding,
yes,
you know, ways that he has good intentions and is more of a lead and everything. Like, I knew that Dwight had been created to be the foil to these people and was a character-y creation to begin with. Andy Bernard was created to be the Stanford version of Dwight, you know, in season three.
Right.
Like, you know, Jim shows up in Stanford and he's got this weirdo who's like a preppy weirdo, like a different type of weirdo.
And also he was an idiot. Like, unlike Dwight, who you saw, Dwight was an idiot in his own way, but I mean, like, sorry, bad at his job. Like, he had been positioned as being not good at his job.
Right. He was not very good at his job. He punched holes in walls.
Right.
You know, he would have needed a lot of, it's the same kind of moving the character over that we did in season two. And I believe Paul was doing that with Andy, but it was different because everybody was paying close attention to the show at that point.
Right.
But there was definitely a lot of, like, there was a lot of, for some reason, the thing with The Office is like people get super into it, obviously.
Right.
Which is great. But then there's so much attention and worry about changing it or touching it or, you know, don't touch my beloved thing.
Right.
Right. So in the same way, there was all this negative attention about adapting the British show. I think that there was a lot of, you know, worry about making any changes to it.
Right. Well, but I think you think of The Office, right, as this place of stasis, right? And we're all there in one room and there's the whole bullpen and everybody's there all the time and it's all the same. But I think one of the special things that you did was you created sort of a kinetic energy by changing, by constantly changing it and not keeping it the same, bringing in the Stanford branch and Ed and Rashida, or Jenna leaving and going to art school, or
so much of that was being driven by Pam and Jim and the romantic storyline. And the way those two characters were set up, they were soulmates. And what I didn't want to do was, like so many shows, they come together, they break apart, they come together, they break apart, you know.
Right.
It didn't seem real. I felt like when they finally get together, they're going to be together. I don't see anything breaking them up. So then the question was, well, how do you spin this out for a certain number of years, right?
9,
yeah.
12.
So, you know, so a lot of it was, what are the obstacles? And we, you know, when I was trying to figure out what came next in the show, I didn't have an entire season broken. I would be able to have about a half a season arced out. And the thought with Pam and Jim was, okay, you know, season one, she's obviously with Roy. Well, actually, season one, the only kind of thing was he was obviously pining, and then he starts dating Purse Girl.
Right.
Right. So season two, she's with Roy, and he's getting closer and closer to confessing his feelings, and he rolls the dice. And you always feel like when you're watching a TV show, you worry about the yank, you know, that's what we call it in the writer's room, where the jeopardy of the episode is something you don't really believe because it would change the show. You know, like you don't really believe like Rain is going to go work for Staples. Right. Dwight's going to leave the show. It's like, no, he's too important to the show. You're not going to send him to Staples. So we set up the situation where Jim was like, well, maybe I should take that job in Stanford. And we were like, is that a yank? I don't know. We worried, is that a yank? And then we were like, let's put him in Stanford, you know?
Right.
Let's really make it happen.
Right.
And that'll give us a whole new lease on the Jim Pam thing because it's a new obstacle. And that cooled it off a lot. And then by the time he finally came back, he had Karen, and that gave us another thing. And then around the like beach games area, the obstacle was, okay, the obstacle is now Pam. It's in Pam's court. She wants to be with Jim, but she's too timid. And so then she walks on the fire, and we were like kind of got past that obstacle. And then eventually it was like, well, can't see any more obstacles. We better get them together.
Right.
And get them together sooner, like slightly sooner than the audience thinks, so that you can preserve, you know, a surprise to it. So but that drove an awful lot of the changes and bringing people in and everything.
Another thing that was super unique about what you did, and I remember you talking about it when it was going on, but that you wanted the episodes to air roughly when they were happening, right? So it's obvious every network show wants Christmas around Christmas time or whatever, but that it was happening sort of within the calendar year, and that you chose to keep the form and the format of each episode is one day. It takes place over one day. And in the summer, the camera crew goes on their holiday and their vacation, and they're not there, so we don't see it.
Yeah.
As opposed to Ross and Rachel kissing, and then 4 months passing, and the next moment is the same moment that we left with, because the audience now has to work and find out what happened.
What happened, right? Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that was, you know, that worked well. I mean, obviously Friends did good too.
Oh, I know. But that was a conscious decision for you, that it was important.
It seemed real. And again, also, like, if you're going to try and stay in the pace, you got to catch up over the summer somehow. I mean, we did it with weight loss. We did a different type thing.
Yes.
Yeah. But, I don't know. I mean, it helped with the storytelling to jump a little bit. Because the other thing is, like, with The Office being so realistic, sometimes it is hard to do a restart or to jump. And sometimes you have to shoot down ideas because you're like, well, how did they get there from yesterday?
Right.
So sometimes a little time jump is really good for that.
Right. Why did you come back? Well, two questions.
And
two questions. One, The Office has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah.
And it was my belief that you knew fairly early what that end was going to be.
Well, it did shift though, because like my idea for the end in the beginning was like around season two, I had this idea that.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on. Get ready for a ride. We're gonna have some fun.
We'll explore and listen to the sounds of awesome places like farms, racetracks, and even construction sites.
Follow your ears, what do you hear?
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
They'll teach us awesome new things about the places and things we see and hear.
What did we learn today?
Learning is so cool.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip Podcasts on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, I was a big fan. First of all, I love documentaries, and I was a big fan of 7-Up, if you remember that one.
No.
Well, 7-Up changes every 7 years. It was 14-Up, 28-Up, and what it is they are following a group of British 7-year-olds. This is this guy, Michael Apted, and he's been doing it. They just did like 69-Up or something.
Okay.
That's how old this documentary is. They're following these guys for every stage of their life. And I think that is like a reality show thing too, of like, oh, it's Survivor. Survivor's over, and let's get them together on a stage and see what happened. And I thought, well, this is cool, right? We could get them together on a stage, and you think that it didn't work out for certain things that you want, but the documentary is still filming. Things are going to happen backstage at the wrap-up. That was kind of my notion. Was that I would provide an unhappy ending for Jim and Pam in the last episode that looked like the series, and then I would do the wrap-up, and I'd have a happy ending at the wrap-up, something like that.
Right.
Anyway, this is obviously 5-7 years out.
Okay.
So this is just a thought. So then the idea of a wedding also is a good one because it attracts people back. So, I mean, I think the idea was let's jump a year, you know? Like if you jump a year, you can really find out what happened to everybody.
Right.
In more of a wrappy-up way. And then we're like, well, let's do both. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And it made sense kind of like if I was the documentary crew and I knew Dwight was getting married, that's when I would do my reunion show because everybody's coming in for the wedding. Because otherwise, I don't think I can get everybody, can't get Toby to come back from wherever he was, Poland. Where was Toby?
Somewhere
London?
Crazy, right?
Somebody, yeah.
And were you ready for the show to end at season 9?
I mean, for me personally, this was the most wonderful, experience in all aspects. It was like creatively super interesting. It was successful. It had a great story in the sense that it didn't look like it was going to be successful, and then it turned out to be successful, which is obviously the best kind of story. And also, it was me being kind of daring a little bit, like to take on doing the remake was a little bit fraught with danger. So I did something a little bold, you know?
Right.
And it was also like there hadn't been shows like this, really. So it was a little bit artistically bold. I don't know. It was a great story, obviously. And I really loved the whole experience. And everybody was so much a family by the time. And part of it was the fact we were in this weird little lot all by ourselves and we had every meal together, you know, and it wasn't that show busy. So it was a tremendous, tremendously wonderful experience. So when I definitely what I knew was I wanted to be there to do it at the end. And I also realized how much more pleasurable it is to be the showrunner than to be an executive producer who gives notes that sometimes are taken and sometimes aren't. You know what I mean?
Right.
That is not as much fun.
Right.
Of an experience. And there is something very personal about the show. I mean, part of it is the whole docu thing, the realism and the people and the truth and beauty and all that kind of stuff. Like, that was everything I felt was important about writing for TV. And it all was able to happen in that show. So after the show was over, I was pretty spent. Do you know what I mean? I was like, well, did it.
Yeah.
You know?
Done.
I'm done. I don't know if I need anything else, you know? And so, yeah, so it kind of felt like, when are you going to get this opportunity? Let's see what a great ending is, you know? So I guess maybe I liked the idea of that. I do think it plays well now when you look at Netflix. Like, I think the fact that it has an ending is a positive.
Totally.
I think people like it, that it has an ending, and then you can start up again if you want it.
Did you know that on the day Dr. King was shot, the all-black security detail normally assigned to him was called off?
They're the ones who would not allow him to stay at any hotel with balconies. That security union was reassigned.
There was a man there who had just flown in, and there was a contract on my life that I was to go home.
Did you know that on the day Dr. King was shot, two black firemen stationed across the street and one black police detective who was surveilling King were all taken off the job?
What was the emergency that caused you to be moved to another fire station?
Sure, there was no emergency.
Chief Wallace, did you ever ask what this was all about?
Yes.
And then what were you told?
Told that I had been threatened.
This is the MLK Tapes. The first episodes are available now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're live here outside the Perez family home just waiting for the... And there they go, almost on time this morning. Mom is coming out the front door strong with a double-arm kid carry. Looks like Dad has the bags. Daughter is bringing up the rear. Oh, but the diaper bag wasn't closed. Diapers and toys are everywhere. Ooh, but Mom has just nailed the perfect car seat buckle for the toddler. And now the eldest daughter, who looks to be about 9 or 10, has secured herself in the booster seat. Dad zips the bag closed, and they're off. Ah, but looks like Mom doesn't realize her coffee cup is still on the roof of the car. And there it goes. Oh, that's a shame. That mug was a fam favorite.
Don't sweat the small stuff. Just nail the big stuff. Like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Learn more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
From Cavalry Audio, the studio that brought you The Devil Within and The Shadow Girls, comes a new true crime podcast, The Pink Moon Murders.
The local sheriff believes there may be more than one killer. It's been 4 days since those bodies were found, and there's no arrest as of this morning.
They were afraid, especially out in that area. What if they come back or whatever?
It scared me to death. Like, it scared me. I was very, very intimidated to live here.
Crazy to think you go to sleep one night, maybe snuggling with your loved one, and never wake up. Or maybe you wake up in a struggle for your life, which you lose.
Join host David Ratterman as he explores one fateful night when evil descended upon small town Ohio.
Killed eight members of an Ohio family in a pre-planned execution.
A family was targeted, most of them targeted while they were sleeping.
The Pink Moon Murders is available on February 22nd, and you can follow The Pink Moon Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last year, The Office was the number one show on Netflix, streamed over 52 billion minutes.
Yeah.
Why do you think that it has endured?
Well, I mean, we did put a lot of good work into it. You know, I think there was a lot of talented people assembled for that show. It was kind of a dream team. And I think that the approach that we took to value character comedy and behavior as opposed to jokes, like jokes kind of don't last that long. But you fall in love with the characters, and you always have something to see. Like, and the stuff, the work that you guys did also gave so much rewatchability to it, you know, because you could follow the story, but you guys were constantly acting in all moments. Like, you can watch the entire show looking at one character, and it's interesting because they're doing their thing. They're being in character, and they're working away and being funny in the background. I think the layers maybe help the rewatching. And I think that the voice of the show is a very humanistic voice too. You know, if there's a message or something that was maybe in the finale, just about the importance of just decency and ordinary lives are worthy of, you know, being on TV. I don't know. That's all good stuff. Yeah.
It's occurring to me truly that I think about who the show appeals to now, and it's so often it's young people and even younger, and people who are potentially marginalized or they don't quite fit in, this awkward teenage years or high school, college, and the show appreciates people of all shapes and sizes and but it does it in a funny way,
yeah.
Which young people like too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, everybody gets the pluses and minuses. It's not like where anybody's excluded.
So right.
It's a pretty inclusive show, yeah, which I think is great. And the other thing about kids, like I didn't understand why it would be appeal to kids because a lot of people were like, well, you know, it's the workplace.
Right.
Right? What do kids know about the workplace? But it's actually really similar to the experience of being a kid in school because, you know, your teacher is your boss and you're sitting at your little desk next to somebody else who you may or may not like, you know, and you're compelled to listen to whatever boring crap, you know, is coming down from above. So I think they relate to it from that standpoint.
I also think, I wonder what you think, that I think the show is subversive. In a way,
mm-hmm.
It's looking at issues or race or the brilliant gay witch hunt episode that you wrote. And it's looking at things in a subversive way, which I feel like the older you get is less appealing. But that sort of young idea of doing something a little bit under the radar and that it's become cool. I don't know.
It's tough. You know, it's hard to talk about what you're doing. I think that there's something that always makes me worried when you talk about comedy or whatever. If at some point you start to be like, I don't want to lose the ability to do it. I don't want to talk about it too much. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. There's that parable of the centipede, I think it is, where they have hundreds of legs. And when the centipede tried to think about how it was that his legs all worked properly, they all got tangled up and he couldn't walk. I don't know.
What do you think the legacy of The Office is?
Well, I do think that it did, like that thing that I was saying about maybe if we go to NBC, we'll change the boat of comedy. I think it did. You know, it seems like a lot of the shows that came after are, if not completely docu definitely have that style. And the people went on to do a lot of great things. And I love that all this new people like the show so much. We used to have a lot of visitors from different Make-A-Wish type things. And I always thought that was indicative of something. You know what I mean? Like people with all these health problems would get a lot, so much solace out of the show. And I always was proud of that, but I didn't really know what it was. But it seems like it was a valuable thing to have made. We did a good job making it. People like it, and it provides something good for them.
I was at a children's hospital last year, and we were going room to room, and one of the administrators would go to the next room and make sure that the kid was able to be seen and we could still kind of go on our little tour. And she came back and she said, "So he doesn't know that you're coming." And I turn the corner and I walk into his room, and he's got tubes everywhere, and he's watching The Office on his TV. And it like took my breath away. That's something that we've created. It can really mean something to people and give them comfort or a laugh in a moment that they have a difficult time. That's something valuable.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with that. That is nice. I mean, you guys in the cast feel it more than I do, because I walk around and it doesn't come up all the time. But like if I walk around with Paul, it comes up all the time.
Right.
like I was just walking down the street with Paul the other day, and I hear this squeal of, you know, brakes, and somebody, you know, just turned his car around and did a U-turn because he saw Paul out of the corner of his eye and, you know, jumped out to tell him how much the show meant to him and everything.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. It is way bigger now than it was.
Oh, really?
When it was on Thursday nights. Interesting.
I knew it was big now, but I didn't know it was felt bigger. But, you know, like sometimes I feel almost bad that you guys are walking around and unable to escape it for the slightest second, you know? I mean, I'd never have wanted to be an actor, so maybe this is just, maybe it's fun. But it's a heavy thing in a way, right? Because like—
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very constant.
And it's television, and it's special, and they're watching it as they lay in bed, or they're in their boxer shorts, or, you know, they're in their underwear and they're watching you and they think they know you.
Yeah.
You're intimate with them.
And I wonder also, like, to what extent, you know, the changes in the TV business have changed things, because, like, it doesn't seem like there will be a lot of 200 episode shows made in the future. And the amount, and that stuff, the sausage thing that I was talking about before, like, when I turn on the show, there's bits and jokes and like there's so many with 200 episodes plus all the subplots and all the like cold opens and the little side. There's really a lot of ideas packed into that, you know, into the show and all the stuff happening in the background and the performances. And, yeah.
Right. I think it's worth me saying to you the degree to which, I mean, you are a director. You're an actor. You played Fern in The Office. Fantastic performance. But you, the degree to which you made decisions from the beginning and are so purposeful in terms of actors is amazing. Hmm. The idea that you wanted reality and that behavior was so important for you on this show.
It's good for actors.
It's really good for actors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for saying that. Yeah. No, I do love that part of it. And maybe part of it is just that it's not my part, right? If I'm writing a script, it's hard to say, and now he touched his head in a very, you know, important way or whatever.
Right,
you can't
really
put that in the script. So it's always really fun to see other people adding all this creativity, because you've gotten it to as far as you can get it, and then you hand it over, and then you just are like marveling at the people that run with it. And then I guess it's sort of improv, because like I think part of the yes and spirit of improv and the team aspect of improv is you take something and you add to it. You don't contradict it. You kind of elaborate on it. And like in the Halloween episode, I had written a whole scene between Dwight and Michael. I don't know if you remember this, but there's a scene where Dwight comes in and is agitating for Michael to get rid of Jim or somebody.
Yes, he's like the dark.
Yeah, he's like a Sith Lord.
Sith Lord, yes.
Yeah. And Michael's got another head on it.
Yes.
And just at the very end, it was like, no, long scene. At the very end, I had some like notion of Michael talking to his head about Dwight in his presence. And they just ran with that. And we didn't end up using anything that was written in the scene. We like started the scene two lines after their improv began, you know? And it was so good. It was such a joy to watch that, them run with this notion. But when you think about it, improv is this mix of writing and acting. And it's more well known, I think, that actors will do that, right? They'll be in the moment, they'll be in their characters, and they'll make up what they have to say. But it's the same process mentally that we're doing in the writer's room. You know what I mean? We're thinking of what to say, and then we're pretending really hard to be the actor in the situation in order to see what's the next line, you know? What can you think about? So we're sort of coming at it from two angles, I guess.
Right. What are you most thankful for?
Well, I'm really thankful, obviously, to have had the experience, like I said, after every season, because it was exactly what I wanted from an artistic point of view, you know, it's just the kind of stuff I like. And to be able to have so many people with me on the ride who were so much fun, and that we managed to do it and still like each other, is pretty cool. I don't know. It was just the best experience.
Well, Greg, you changed my life, and you changed the lives of every single person you invited to join you on this journey. And
we're stuck with each other now.
That was what I was going to say.
We are ghost ship.
Totally.
Do you remember going to the TV Land Awards?
Oh, yes.
That was so crazy.
Oh, yes. I haven't RSVP'd. At least for the next decade, I'm going to stay away. But
has anyone told the story of that?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, you should tell. We won. This was odd. The Office was still on the air, and we won the award for Future Classic Television Show. And Greg, you were there with me.
Yes. And they had an opening number where I think it was Vanessa Williams, maybe?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Was singing. And she was singing a song about all the different characters on different TV shows. And it started off pretty respectfully with, you know, like the guy that played Greg Brady or something. I forget.
Yes.
But she would say the person's character name and their actual name. And then that person would slide in on a hook.
On a hook over the audience.
Over the audience.
Like ziplining in.
Yeah. And it started off kind of cool, and people were like, okay. And then she stopped using the actual actors' names and just said the characters' names. And it was like, Horshack! And he would slide in. And then the people started banging into each other like slabs of beef in a slaughterhouse. And then she didn't even know the characters' names. It was like, the guy from The Great American Hero. And he'd slide in and bang into the other people, and they were like on these hooks above the audience. And I looked at you guys, and you were all looking up at it like, oh my God.
No. Oh. Yeah. Well, yeah, we're all stuck together, and it's we'll see what happens
next.
What
the future brings. Yeah. Well, eventually they'll turn on us.
They will.
You can't be this successful or this popular.
Something will
turn. They'll be like, oh, Generation Z Office love. That was
that
everybody
was so
makes
misguided.
Fun of.
Yeah. Thank you. We covered so much. You were here so long.
Well,
I'm so thankful.
It was super fun. I just would have been, you know, even if they weren't recording, it would have been nice to have the conversation over a coffee with you.
You know, I honestly couldn't think of a better man to be stuck with. Thank you, Greg, for coming on and for sharing so much with all of us. And I couldn't possibly end this episode without giving thanks to you. Every single one of my listeners that has been with me every step of the way on this wild ride, I appreciate you so much. And I hope that we have brought just a small fraction of the joy into your lives that you've brought into ours. So please, go out there, hug your friends, hug your family, and remember the lesson that Greg has burned into all of our minds by now. That each and every one of us, weird human beings, is deserving of love. And there's always beauty in ordinary things. And since I believe we're all deserving of love, I would like to remind you about our call-in episodes, where I will be showing you guys all of the love. So be sure to send me those voice memos that you can record on the voice memo app on your phone. Email me at theofficedeepdive@gmail.com with your questions, your comments, special requests, stories, takeout orders, whatever. Leave your name, your phone number, where you're from, and then anything else you want to tell me. I'm so excited to hear what you have to say. Oh, and of course, don't forget to tune in next week, because we have a really fun episode coming up. I'm not going to lie, I'm going back to Scranton, where it all started, and you are coming with me. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. The Office Deep Dive is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Leng Lee. Our senior producer is Tessa Kramer. Our producers are Liz Hayes and Diego Tapia. My main man in the booth is Alec Moore. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by my great friend, Creed Bratton. And the episode was mixed by Seth Olansky. Would you say your name and your role on The Office?
Okay. My name is Greg Daniels, and I was the adapter and showrunner for most of The Office. How about that?
I mean, that is such a long identifier that we'll never play that.
Okay. I'm Fred. I'm
Vern.
Hi, I'm Greg Daniels. I was the showrunner of The Office.
Well done. Thank you, my friend. I did
it. Now you're directing me.
Oh, yes.
Shoes on the other foot.
Oh, my gosh.
Did you know that on the day Dr. King was shot, the all-black security detail normally assigned to him was called off?
They're the ones who would not allow him to stay at any hotel with balconies.
Chief Wallace, did you ever ask what this was all about?
Yes. And what were you told?
Told that I had been threatened.
This is the MLK tapes. The first episodes are available now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jake Halpern, host of Deep Cover. Our new season is about a lawyer who helped the mob run Chicago. He bribed judges and even helped a hitman walk free. Until one day when he started talking with the FBI and promised that he could take the mob down. I've spent the past year trying to figure out why he flipped and what he was really after. Listen to Deep Cover on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Paris Hilton, and this is Trapped in Treatment, a weekly podcast of shocking survivor experiences and stories from an industry plagued by controversy. With my hosts, Caroline Cole and Rebecca Mellinger, we will uncover the truth of one teen treatment facility each season. First up, Provo Canyon School. This one is personal. Listen to Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right.
right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.